Good afternoon. Today is Thursday, November 13th, 2025. We're going to call to order the Citizens Advisory Task Force meeting. It is 5:30 p.m. Please stand with us for the Pledge of Allegiance. Yes.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Irene, roll call, please.
James Albano.
Very happy to be present.
Dana Mark Stancil. Holmes Hilton is excused. David Ferguson.
I'm here.
Suzanne Nicholson is excused. Larry Gross. Terry Baker. Adolphos Evans, Valerie Clymer.
Here.
Mindy Melendez is excused. Kelsey Lombard. Carla Amaral.
Here.
Sanford Shank.
Here.
Madam Chairwoman, we have a quorum.
Thank you. The next item on our agenda is the approval of the minutes. Did everyone receive the minutes?
Yes.
Are there any corrections?
Oh, I'm sorry. Ms. Shank?
Yes.
Come here, wait.
I apologize. Tamara McRoy.
No worries.
Here. Thank you. Sorry, Ms. Shank.
Okay, thank you. Next item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes. Did everyone receive the minutes? Are there any corrections or additions? Seeing none, do we have a motion to approve the minutes?
I make a motion to approve the minutes.
I second that.
Okay. Irene, roll call, please.
James Albano.
Yes.
David Ferguson.
Yes.
Valerie Clymer.
Yes.
Carla Amaral.
Yes.
Tamara McElroy.
Yes.
Sanford Shank.
Yes.
Motion carries 6-0.
Thank you. The next item on our agenda is the review of the CDBG Consolidated Annual Performance and Evaluation Report for the program year 2024, which is October 1st, 2024 to September 30th, 2025.
Mr. Evans is coming, so just to let you know.
Who?
Mr. Evans.
Mr. Evans? Oh, okay.
We just want to, sorry, look at the screen. We want to see the screen.
So if you guys choose at this time to see the screen, you can move your chairs around since it's behind you.
Or if you don't want to drag it, you can just take one of the
audience.
Behind us as well.
It's behind us.
It's right here.
Okay. We're on the wrong side of the table.
Well, we have to be.
I can pull some more chairs over if you guys.
Okay. All right.
Okay. One, two.
Hello, welcome, Mr. Evans. Let the record reflect that Mr. Adolphus Evans arrived at 5:34 p.m.
Good evening, everyone.
For joining us. Good evening.
We're session.
We came
around. Oh, okay. 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 So, good evening, Madam Chair and members of the Citizens Advisory Task Force. For the record, Jose Papa, Senior Planner with the Community Development Department. And we're here tonight to, since we just finished the 24-25 fiscal year, we're here to present to you the annual report for the CDBG activities. Just go through this outline. I know there are some of you who might not. Just to give some background on the CDBG program, I will then present the annual report, which is a list of accomplishments or completed projects that use CDBG funds as well, and then we'll go over the next steps for this annual report. The just briefly, the CDBG program, of course, a federal program, started in 1974 through the compilation of various other community development and housing programs. This program provides a lot of discretion to grantee on CDBG activities, but any activities to be funded with CDBG must meet one of the national objectives of the program. One, it must meet a benefit or benefit a low and moderate income persons or area, or two, activities there to prevent or eliminate slum or blight, or three, address an urgent community development need, an emergency, and typically those are federally declared emergencies or state declared emergencies would qualify too. But over all that, objective one must be met no matter what. That even if you're there to prevent or eliminate slum or blight, the beneficiaries of doing that need to qualify as low and moderate income persons. And the same thing, if you were to provide assistance during an emergency, the beneficiaries still have to be low and moderate income persons. Just to go through general broad categories of some types of CDBG programs. They include things like housing-related activities, whether it's home ownership or rehabilitation, public services, which is limited to 15% of the grant allocation, economic development activities, infrastructure improvements, but that those would have to be in a qualified area, or a low-moderate income census tract would be that qualifying area. And also, CDBG program does allow a certain portion of the allocation, up to 20%, to be used for planning, administration, and monitoring of the program, which we do take advantage of.
Could you give an example of the economic development criteria?
Sure. Sometimes it could be, I'll give you an example, that for economic development, again, likely it's going to be in a qualified area. And some cities have used it where they've rehabbed or refurbished, let's say, a blighted commercial area, let's say commercial building. And of course, the beneficiaries would have to, since it is in a low moderate income area, that would qualify as one of those economic development activities. It could also be for training, but those are also considered, although it's economic development, the training would be considered public service, and it would be limited to 15% of that grant allocation. But the more I guess popular ones that really in those blighted areas, I think some have used it to, like we open a community grocery store so that a food desert, you know, an area that didn't have access to fresh food would have that availability. Yes, sir. So since 2012, we've had nothing exciting like those examples of economic development, but we have funded the following types of programs within the city. And we've funded an infrastructure project in a low-moderate income area. As we see with our annual allocation, we provide financial assistance to low-moderate income households for home repair, financial assistance to a first-time home buyer. We provided stipends to assist students from low-moderate income households to attend summer camp. We have a mini grant program for nonprofits. And what we see with that is that the beneficiaries have used that for emergency rent or utility payments. And in some cases, one recipient, Family Life Center, uses it to assist victims of domestic violence. So we're here tonight to review one of the required documents under the CDBG program, and that's what we call the Consolidated Annual Performance and Evaluation Report. It's essentially an end-of-year report, and what we provide are the numbers, how many beneficiaries, the dollar amount that was spent from CDBG, or for various activities. So per federal regulations, the period to be covered by this annual report. It's from October 1st of last year, 2024, to September 30, 2025. And again, the purpose is to describe the activities undertaken during this time using CDBG funds. And the report provides an update on the city's progress in implementing the CDBG programs and the activities identified in the consolidated and annual action plan. And for those of you who are familiar with the annual action plan, is that budget that or a statement of the activities that we will undertake using CDBG funds, and that usually we have that document come before this board during the summer. So for fiscal year 24-25, the familiar activities that were funded with CDBG include the housing rehab program, first-time home buyers, the public service for youth activities, the public service grants, and planning administration. And that includes administration for housing activities. It includes staff time, as for public meetings, public outreach, such as the fair housing, the housing fair that the city holds annually in collaboration with other agencies. So going through each of these activities under the housing rehab program, there were 13 single family units that received assistance through this program. Five were started the previous fiscal year and completed this year. Eight homes were started in the fiscal year, six have been completed, and two are still in the final stages of completion. And the expenditure for that was about $538,000. Yes. No.
The version of this.
Yeah, it's all compiled into that.
Okay. What were the repairs, just out of curiosity?
Sure. It could range anywhere from a new water heater to a roof, a new AC unit, and then I think in one case we even had to replace the ducts. You know, it could be that did we have any mold remediation this year?
We did have mold remediation in two houses.
So, yeah.
So they're usually life safety type.
Yes, ma'am.
So people can't just go in and get a grand remodel of their home.
Must the home qualify under all code once it's assisted?
Yes, sir. That's part of the program is to bring the home up to current code. And of course, all beneficiaries must meet that low moderate income threshold.
And what's the annual expenditure or annual amount we receive?
Annually, we receive somewhere between $450,000 to $500,000. I know that's more than that, but that's because, again, we have carryover from previous years.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So like we said there, we started five in the previous fiscal year, and we just finished this year. So we'll see some carryover in next year's annual report.
Can I have a
comment?
Sure. For the first time home buyers, they end up with like a second mortgage that's forgiven. Mm-hmm.
Yes, they have the same thing. They have a lien on their property. It's a quiet lien. There's no interest on it. It's just there so that if they sell within 5 years, they have to pay the full amount back, or not they have to pay it back, but it's taken out of the proceeds of the sale of the home. So if they receive $30,000 in CDBG assistance and they decide to sell within the first 5 years, the program will get back the $30,000, which we then feed back into the program as program income, which allows us to redistribute it again for our housing rehab activity. Mm-hmm. Now, year 6 through 10, they start getting forgiveness, 20% per year. So by year 10, say in your home, 10 years after you receive CDBG assistance, the lien is forgiven.
Nice.
And you don't have to pay anything back. Yeah, it's 20% forgiven. Yeah, it's 10 years to be fully forgiven. Yes.
First time.
Well, it depends on whether it's SHIP or CDBG.
Within payments. So, yeah, first-time home buyers, they pay it back in full if they sell within the first 10 years.
They're not prorated.
It's not prorated.
And, you know, that's something we can look at later about subsidy retention.
Yep.
Attach it to the home.
Well, I guess the big difference here is that these are homes that are owned, or I mean, they receive the mortgage. Their assistance is not through getting into the home,
right? It's
but their assistance is to be able to maintain and stay in that home. I think that's a discussion for this board to have when we start talking about incentives.
Okay.
Yes. But yeah, nothing is set in stone. You can certainly formulate that in any way you want. So the first-time home buyer program for households were assisted for an expenditure of $55,000 for the four. So here the allocation varies, right? It varies from $10,000 to $25,000. So somewhere between the four households, we were able to provide $55,000 in assistance. And I'm sorry, this is a preview. And the next presentation will be Ms. Gonzalez providing you with some additional activities on how we can use our first-time home buyer program allocation. And then public service, youth activities, summer camp, and other recreational activities such as swim lessons or golf lessons or tennis lessons. If, again, meeting the low moderate income threshold, 80 students. I believe this year that all the assistance did go to the summer camp participants, and that's for a total of $35,840. And again, it varies from student to student. Some student might only come for 1 week. Other students might come for the entire 10 weeks. So the assistance they get will vary on how much they participated in summer camp. But we only seek for reimbursement based on its usage. So even if a student signed up for the entire summer, but they only used one or two weeks, we will not be reimbursing for the full 8 weeks only. And of course, yes, sir.
Are we planning on interfacing with the YMCA proposed and the new mini golf course to provide low mod activities?
Well, that's
those projects.
Sure. I would say that recreational activities are managed and administered by our Parks and Recs department, and if they feel the need to include that as part of their program, it's something that they can propose for use of this. In summer camp, it's not that they just sit here and draw and whatever. They do take field trips as part of that. So whatever field trips they might take, and of course the supervision that those kids need when they go, that just becomes part of that overall cost.
I've seen several programs with training programs, et cetera, supportive services also.
Yes, sir. And again, public service grant program for nonprofits. Here, 77 individuals or households were assisted for a total of $83,244. More detail on that. Again, the two recipients, Family Life Center. Their main mission is to provide assistance for domestic violence victims, whether that's an emergency service or a relocation services. Flagler Cares, they typically just provide for emergency rent and utility assistance. There was something I wanted to mention about these two. Yeah, so the CDBG amount that they receive is a very small portion of the service that they provide. So even with the domestic violence assistance that Family Life Center provides, you know, the $30,000 of CDBG funds that they get is just a small portion of what they actually provide assistance to those victims. previous slide, either 77 individuals or households. I mean, we can break it down to how many of them were from Crew Family Life Center, how many were by their care. So I just don't have that.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Just, why are there two different entries instead of just the one for the 29,000? Did they just draw?
Yes. What you're looking at is a draw. So they try to draw quarterly. So
okay.
each quarter is a will come up as a separate draw.
Okay. Yes.
And then some additional costs that we have is the administration and monitoring of the housing programs. And here, the activities here is that we don't have dedicated full-time staff to the housing program or to the housing activities, because we really don't have a housing program. We provide a housing activity financial assistance. And so here we retain the services of a consultant who will go out and inspect a home, write up the scope of work, and this firm is qualified to know what activities are CDBG eligible. And they'll know that you just can't add a new countertop just because you want a new countertop. They'll know that they'll look at the roof, with the AC unit. They'll know if someone says, I need new cabinets, they'll have to look at the condition of the cabinet. If it's falling off the wall and it's not salvageable, likely it's going to be replaced. But especially if it's, if mold has infiltrated the cabinet. So those would be the things that he would write in the scope of service. And during the rehab of the home, on top of the city inspections, our consultant is there to make sure that they're actually doing the work that they said that they would, based on the scope of service and contracts that they have. They will review the invoices that we get from the contractor or the builder, and again, and provide a recommendation to our housing program manager, Jackie, to make sure that it's okay to pay that invoice. And of course, any issues that come up, such as a client, a recipient, being unhappy with the quality of work, our first line of defense would be our consultant who will try to address the issue, which at times takes a lot of time and patience. Yes.
The contractors are hired through the city, or?
Yes, by CDBG, or I should say HUD rules, we need to have a closed bid.
Right?
Closed bid. So we issue a request for qualifications or request for bid with a scope of service. We need this, and this. We put that in the paper. We also distribute
it on city.
On
the solicitation.
And so the qualified contractor can bid on that project again with a closed bid. And of course, low bidder is supposed to win, but I think the client, the homeowner, always has a right to challenge it and maybe go with a different contractor.
If that's
not
enough.
No, so we usually have a rotation of contractors. We usually keep about five that come through that rotate out. Try to make sure that we distribute it evenly. Lowest bidder, like he said, the option, give them up to a 10% cushion. So say that we meet the homeowner and they say, well, me and this contractor really weren't getting along. To prevent future conflicts, we would say, okay, this is the next bidder that qualifies within that 10% range. If they don't like either bidder, then we have to make the decision and we usually go with the lowest bidder. But then our consultant will monitor that situation and act as the mediator between the homeowner and the contractor.
And the consultant has building experience? They know what they're looking at?
Yes, he's actually a certified HUD inspector,
okay.
As well as he acts as pretty much as a contractor on site with the contractor.
And sometimes, is it Isn't it the case if someone applies and they are accepted into the program, when they're going out to review for the scope of services, they may find things that the person didn't even apply for, correct?
Yes, ma'am. So one of the key things for this program is that once you touch the house, any health safety issues will need to be addressed. And so like I think I've used the example before, we never know that we start off with replacing a broken window. But we go to the broken window and we find that the framing around the window is rotten. So now that's added to the work. You start trying to address the window frame and you find a leak. In the inside is starting to grow mold on the inside walls. We have to address those. So an activity can certainly expand beyond what is just visual or easily seen to a homeowner. And I think that probably works for a lot of us, that we only know what's broken by looking at it and not seeing some of the things that are going on underneath.
And that's why you can see such a variation between the amounts of money that are spent per applicant, because we had one year where the home has severe mold and you guys had to find another place. Remember the man?
Yes,
right,
ma'am.
Here's,
yes,
yeah.
Ma'am.
Yeah.
Yes. So.
Yeah,
$160,000 worth of work done on one home.
Oh, wow.
And the last activity that we have is just the general planning and monitoring of the programs. These include things like income qualification activities, staff time, your ads for public meetings, public outreach, and that's about $40,000. So. So Jackie's time, and again, what we spend on, the time that we spend on working for the program, whether it's preparing the annual report or preparing the annual action plan, or Jackie having to deal with recipient issues, those are accounted for. And income qualification activity, I think I just want to point this out because Jackie and I had a good conversation about this. So it's a general planning activity in that because we don't know yet whether an individual is qualified, right? So going through that process of making sure the person is actually eligible is a general planning activity. But once we know they're qualified, and we have to record a deed for the lien on their home, that's a service delivery. It's part of that activity, that's part of it because you're now working on it with CDBG funds, so you need to record this lien, that becomes an act qualifying. So that's the difference between the general planning admin activity and then the administration and monitoring of the housing program.
So the admin costs,
yes.
So is there like a sunk cost? So if Jackie goes and works with these people, and her time gets dedicated towards that, but the people don't qualify, does her time still get billed to the
CDBG?
Yes,
that's, yes. In that case, that's yes.
Yep.
What is the relationship between Palm Coast CDBG and Flagler County overall, unincorporated?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Do you want to address that?
It doesn't matter.
Okay.
So CDBG program, we actually work in conjunction with the SHIP program, so we. That's how we were able to do the $180,000 on that one home, $160,000 rather, we were talking about earlier. City CDBG program took 80% and the county took 80%, $80,000 each to make the $160,000 because we as CDBG couldn't make it whole.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't have enough funds. And even at that, our limit was $50,000, so we had to go to council and get an additional $30,000. But we worked together in coordination to do matching funds so we can make that whole property whole. Instead of leaving it out there with those gaps in it. Because we could have put a new roof on it and walked away from it, which it would have covered, but it wouldn't have did the mold remediation, taking up all the floors. It was leaking so bad, the fireplace was displaced. We had to redo the fireplace.
Mm-hmm.
It had 8 holes in the roof. It was horrible.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And so the total, again, adding all those up, total for the fiscal year, $780,285. I will qualify this, though, and say that you know, because it covers what's reported in IDIS, the CDBG accounting program, is based on what we draw down, as in what we request for payback. Mm-hmm. So I have to tell you that, like, mainly for the public service, the grant program, since we don't get their quarterly reimbursement until October, you know, towards the end of October, all the work that they did for that last quarter, that would have been the July through September quarter of the last fiscal year, is not in this, but we will report it the following year. And that just kind of carries over. But the housing rehab and the other activities, they're pretty much up to date. But if we did have, because those, we control the invoicing and the reimbursement for those, right? But when I'm relying on a public nonprofit to give me a quarterly reimbursement, and sometimes they can get it, but other times they just can't.
Timing.
It's just the timing. Yes.
If and when there's a surplus over a fiscal year, you have to send that back to HUD?
Never.
You can carry it over?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah, so like when we provide you with an annual action plan, and we say we're going to spend $300,000 on housing rehab, that's it. It's only taken back if you don't spend it within 7 or 8 years.
That's what I was going to say. It's not forever.
Right.
It's not forever. Yes.
Use it over the
next.
Yes. But we've never had an issue with, we've never had to send money.
What we were able to do during COVID, at one point in time we had a surplus, and that's how you guys were able to offset people's utilities.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
During COVID.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
How does this number compare with the prior year?
Oh, in terms of spending? Yeah. Or it's about there. I mean, it might be a little more than previous years.
Not materially different.
No, sir. Yeah, it's just a matter of how long did it take this one house to get finished? Did it carry over? No, how many houses were we able to finish in the last fiscal year? I mean, if there were a lot of work to be done on those homes, then it might carry over to another fiscal year. But, yeah, for the most part, you're going to be work probably like around this range, 650 to 780. Just really depends on
The timing.
Yes, sir.
So we have flexibility with 65%. You have a mandatory 35% from the 20% admin and the 15% public service, right? So sometimes, like, we have grown in the amount of money that we are able to put into housing programs.
Yes.
Because, you know, as a task force, we look at it and they do the presentation and may change up a little bit of the allocation. So
I recall that discussion a year ago or two.
Yeah, we always seem historically to have more money than people leaving in this program, right? I mean, for a while we had, like, first-time buyers. We had more money in the kitty for first-time buyers than people were
utilizing. Right, because that's where the public campaign, because people weren't aware of the resources.
Right.
But they are out, Jackie's out there at the housing fairs and everywhere now, really getting the information out so you see the numbers improving.
And so, of course, with this, staff will recommend that the Citizens Advisory Task Force approve this report so we can move it forward to City Council, where we will present to them at a public hearing on November 18, and that gives us plenty of time to get the document finalized and submitted to HUD by December 29. And of course, this document's available for public comment. It's posted on the website for 2 weeks, 15-day public comment, starting tomorrow through November 28. December 29th, because it's within 90 days of the end of the fiscal year. Mm-hmm. So, yes, ma'am.
I have one more question.
Yes, ma'am. That's probably funds that are available, but not unallocated. Those could be those funds that are already dedicated for a home that's under repair. There's no such thing as unallocated fund. It's a term that they use that we haven't spent it yet.
They're committed funds.
Yeah, it's a good way. Yeah, it's a good way to put it. It's committed to an activity already.
Obligated in 90 days.
Yes, sir. And we did that when we did the action plan. Like you said, we take the full amount that we would get for that fiscal year. Let's say it's $500,000. And then when we do the action plan, this board will recommend something. And then I'll just make an example. We want $300,000 for housing rehab, $100,000 for first-time home buyers. That leaves us with $200,000. And I'm not going to get into 15% of 500. It's like, okay, $75,000 that we can use for public service. And the balance of it for admin. I mean, that's a lot of admin. I don't think we can, yeah, whatever. But so that's where it's so it's allocated. And unallocated in terms of ITIS is just that you haven't drawn this down. I'm not going to try to change what the federal government uses, the terms that they use.
Right.
I don't have the brain power, and I don't think any of us have the patience.
So it's money that's in an account somewhere waiting to be used?
Yes, in a account.
The money is reimbursable, it's a drawdown, so it's not like we have the money sitting in a bank account with the city of Palm Coast. It's not like that. So when it's a draw schedule from the federal government.
So there's $400,000 of our money that the federal government has that you were going to use for?
No, it's not our money. It's $400,000 of the federal government's money
the CDBG.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so the CDBG has $400,000 in an account somewhere that we can use for?
You've already allocated it.
It's already.
I've already used it.
You've already said what you're going to use it for.
You've already committed it. You haven't used it.
What is it committed to?
Yes.
Probably either the housing program, rehab, or first-time home buyers. A portion of it probably is still available for, as I mentioned, the last quarter we haven't drawn down for public service. And we still have some, and we do have leftover admin money. So that's still just going to sit in the bank until we use it and then draw it down.
Well, I'm just saying, are we still accepting applications for first-time home buyers? Are we still accepting applications for the houses? Because we have maybe this money.
You have no. It's kind of like when you're building a house and you get to draw from the bank, right? You might have got your roof dry in, and all of a sudden you got an extra $400,000. But you know you have to pay the roofer and the drywall guy and everybody else in that draw.
Yes.
So basically, the money has been set aside. It's still in the federal government's account, but they're able to draw against it when they need it. So, but they've already allocated for it. They just haven't got an invoice to match up with that money yet.
The way it works is that the city essentially fronts the money. I mean, we have to pay our contractors when they submit an invoice. So we'll go ahead and cut a check to them. Let's say it's for $100,000. And then we try to do it quarterly. We'll have to go into the ITIS system that HUD has, and there create a voucher so that we can draw down that $100,000 that we used to pay contractor A.
And yes, our application process per council dictation last year is now open year-round.
Yes.
So we accept both programs year-round applications.
Nice. And they do have people draw because they may not want to endure the process, or the time frame is too long, so you do have people draw.
But really, we have a kickoff in November, right?
Right.
Yes.
So this Saturday actually is the kickoff for CDBG 2025-26, and I'm doing the CDBG housing program, and I invited the county along, so it'll be SHIP and CDBG to Saturday at the Southern Recreation Center, for people to come in, talk one-on-one, and to provide applications at that time for the programs.
But CDBG funds can only be used within City of Palm Coast and city limits.
Correct.
So not outside of City of Palm Coast.
And but we can use both funds in first-time home buyers and in rehab. So that's why I included SHIP, because people who may have more significant damage on their homes can qualify for both programs. Because one is federal money and one is state.
Mm-hmm. As long as they are within the city of limits.
Right.
And of course, with the government that's reopening, I will have to tell you that we haven't received the contract for
25.
For 25, the action is. Yeah. So we are waiting for it. And I don't know how long that will take.
Thank you. So do we have any more questions? We asked questions during the presentation. Any more questions of the Citizens Advisory Task Force? Seeing none, we're going to open for public comment. Do you all have any comments? Nope. We'll close public comment. Return to the task force. Do we have a motion regarding item number two, to review of the CDBG Consolidated Annual Performance and Evaluation Report for the program year 2024?
I'd like to make a motion to accept it.
And a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a first by Ms. McElroy and a second by Ms. Clymer. Irene, roll call, please.
James Obama.
Yes.
David Ferguson.
Yes.
Valerie Clymer.
Yes.
Carla Amaral. Adolfo Evans.
Yes.
Tamara McElroy.
Yes.
Sandra Shane.
Yes.
The motion carries 7-0.
Thank you. We will move to the next item on the agenda, which is Resolution 2025-XX, amending policy relating to the Community Development Block Grant Purchase Assistance Program for first-time homebuyers. Ms. Gonzalez.
Thank you. So you guys gave me a task a couple of years ago of trying to figure out how we can better advertise the first-time homebuyers program, as well as spend the funds that were being allocated because we weren't seeing so much interest in the program. So I came up, worked with HUD, and we came up with a couple of ideas. So just to give you some background about creating our first-time homebuyers program in 2021, this is to benefit low, very low, and extremely low-income households to purchase a home and make it affordable in Palm Coast. So we just recently started the program. It's not even 5 years old at this point. So first-time homebuyers program, maximum that we can offer for a person that's qualified is $35,000 in down payment assistance, as it's written today. The program is growing, but we noticed that most of our applicants that received the funds were Habitat for Humanity applicants. Mm-hmm. So we tried to figure out how can we broaden the scope and make the fund a little bit more friendly to other applicants that want to participate in the program. So working with HUD, I came up with some ideas. First thing HUD said is that if in the future we ever wanted to expand the program outside of just first-time homebuyers, we needed to change the name to Purchase Assistance. So we're changing the plan name to Purchase Assistance Program. That way, also in the future, going to give us opportunities to help more than just first-time homebuyers when we're trying to do purchase assistance if we choose to go that route. Second change is this year, for the first time, I actually had three houses that had issues with inheritance, where they inherited property outside of the city of Palm Coast and they were using that as their income. But the property was in their name, so we created an inheritance clause. I brought you guys a version of it at the meeting back in July, so I fine-tuned it, and this is what the final version was per your direction. The second thing is, updated the down payment assistance program and closing costs, kind of make it coordinated a little bit better with what HUD standards were. Also, we added two new programs, a mortgage interest rate buy-down program, as well as a mortgage subsidy program. This way, it should be able to reach further with the dollars instead of just covering down payment assistance. After doing a lot of reviewing with HUD, we realized a lot of mortgage companies, as well as banks and developers, builders, were offering down payment and closing cost assistance. And there's a certain percentage that they can use of that fund with mortgage and the banks. So we were kind of doing ourselves an injustice by not offering additional programs instead of just down payment assistance to kind of help people afford a home and look at it as long-term affordability instead of temporary one-time buy-down.
What is a mortgage subsidy?
So a mortgage subsidy, now I'm going to give it on the next slide.
Oh, I apologize.
That's okay. A mortgage subsidy is just a program where we can actually give them a subsidized amount of money to help buy down the actual loan amount up front. So they're not carrying that interest on that loan for the full amount, the whole entire term of the 30-year mortgage. So the inheritance clause, the first thing that we added, actually said an individual inheriting a home, regardless of the occupancy, constitutes ownership. Therefore, they're disqualified to be considered a first-time home buyer. That's the direction we wanted to go. We didn't want to give them instances, or Debbie wrote in hers, it can be a certain amount of feet away from the city limits and things of that nature. We just said, if you own a home, you're no longer a first-time home buyer.
And this aligns with the state of Florida.
Correct.
But if we change it to purchase assistance, how does it work?
Well, right now it's directed at first-time home buyers because everything in our purchase assistance program is first-time home buyers. So when I reworded it, it just says that. So you'll see every program, if you're looking at the ordinance, it starts off with for first-time home buyers. So I'm qualifying it for her that the program is dedicated toward first-time home buyers. When we do decide to create other purchase assistance programs, then we'll clarify who are the applicants for those program types. It just gives us the flexibility in the future to be able to get a little more creative and think outside of the box instead of just only first-time home buyers.
And first-time doesn't mean never bought a home, right? It's never had a
you're
home.
You're a first-time last home buyer, so if you do not own a property for 3 years, once again covered as a first-time home buyer.
Mm-hmm. Not on any deed anywhere in the world is usually the way it goes.
So then the second is the down payment assistance and closing costs. What I did is I modified it, the award language. We were saying that it was low, very low, and moderate, which the percentages was not aligned with HUD. So our 80% is actually not a moderate product, and HUD said we weren't. We can create that and say if we wanted to, but if it was moderate with HUD, HUD would be 120%. Not 80. Mm. So the recommendation was just to remove our descriptions and just leave the percentages there. So the AMI percentages are 30, 50, 80. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to qualify by low, very low, or moderate. We took the terms out completely. Then that way, we're still in compliance with HUD regardless of how we use the funding.
I think that's good because now you're taking any stigmatism out as well.
Then we did an interest rate point buy-down program. And so when I'm referring to buying down the points, that means the upfront points or interest rate, we're going to help them lower the interest rate, which actually lowers the affordability over the life of the loan. So that is a better product than just the one-time down payment assistance, where every year you know that the cost of the mortgage is going to go up because insurance goes up and also taxes go up. So let's get the interest rate bought down by at least one percentage point, and that way they go from a 6% mortgage to maybe a 5.
Can they pick and choose or have like a menu? Okay, say we have the $35,000. Can we use $10,000 for down payment and X number of thousand for buy down?
So the way we wrote it in HUD, HUD says you cannot. So you cannot double dip.
You can't mix and match.
Yeah, so you can either choose one of the programs, but it cannot exist with any other program. But say they use our point buy-down program, they can use SHIP funds to do down payment assistance or to do a shared equity cost cut. That's the new product that SHIP came up with, if they wanted to, because it's two different funding pots. But they can't mix and match in our program. They can choose one of the three of the four options they have available to them.
Point of clarification, is there a way to put in here that 1 point equals 1% of the loan amount?
Yes. So.
Okay. There we go.
There you go.
Thank you.
So each point of the loan amount, so 1% is a 0.1% of the loan amount,
right,
which actually equivalates to 0.25 of the interest rate.
Depending on the day.
And it depends on the day, right?
So this can vary.
Right. Right, exactly. And some days it's an eighth, some days it's three quarters.
And that's why they know this can vary, because like I say, it just depends on what the interest rate is doing at the time. One thing that was key that HUD made sure we put in there is that it had to be a fixed rate. They're not going to do adjustable rate mortgages.
Perfect, yeah.
And we're not going to do 50-year loans because that's the new product that's out there now.
It's not out. It is not out. It is not out yet.
Yeah. Well, it's coming. And she said, make sure we clarify which years we would do. So 30 and 15 was suggested that we make sure that we be very specific on the type of mortgages that we qualify for these by point buy-down program.
They should have, if they did the 50 year, they should make it like a balloon after 30 or something.
Well, but most people don't have their mortgages because of the low rates. We're in abnormal times. Most people don't have a mortgage for more than 5 years.
Correct.
So, the C income, if you're capitalizing FHA, VA, I think the C in conventional should be, but that's just me.
No, that's fine.
This is just the presentation.
Yes, I'll capitalize it for the counseling when I get to the presentation.
Okay.
And it is important to note that subprime mortgages and adjustable rate mortgages are not allowed, period.
Perfect.
So that means anything that's going DC paper in the mortgage industry and me just talking that lingo would not be allowed to be in this purchase program because they're going to have a higher risk of being foreclosed on, and we don't want to put them in that option of us now having to go through foreclosure process with this program.
And that also aligns with SHIP.
Correct. So then this option, like I said, will allow us to be able to use CDBG funds, but it's not going to be allowed to be used with the down payment assistance and closing costs. You can use this option at point buy down, and that's it.
But then you can get SHIP funds with the down payment.
Correct, if you need them.
If you need them.
So basically, what our program will do, you can buy it up to 4% percentage points of the amount to reduce the interest rate by one full point. So what's gonna happen is, like I said, the interest rate could be 6-7%. We're gonna put up the $10,000 as a funding cap that you can qualify for to get your interest rate reduced to 6% from the 7% interest rate. And like I said, that helps promote long-term affordability for the 30-year loan instead of just a one-time payout that doesn't affect, that will not help. It's still gonna be 10 years non-amortizing, zero interest forgivable deferred payment loan. So if you live in a home for 10 years, it'll be, you do not have to pay the money back. If you sell the home within the 10 years, you have to pay back the full amount that was used to purchase the buy down.
I have one question.
Mm-hmm.
So if the interest rates happen to drop even lower during that 10-year period,
mm-hmm.
and you decide to refinance, do you have to repay the $10,000?
You do.
So if you refinance, do you have to repay? Okay.
Right, and there's only certain terms that you can refinance under the program, which is get a lower interest rate. You can't take cash out. You can't purchase. So that's why it's 100% payback. Because if you refinance for any other purposes besides to get a cheaper interest rate or to reduce insurance or something of that nature, then you really are going to have to pay back the money anyway.
Well, and if you're paying that many points, it's going to take you at least 5 years to recoup the money, the difference in the interest rate anyway. But so you're saying you'll subordinate if somebody just wants to do an interest rate reduction type loan?
Correct. So we do subordinate and we'll take up the third position in subordination.
And just for clarification, you may want to allow applicants to buy up to 4 points to reduce the interest rate because the way the wording is, it's a little confusing.
So I'm going to make a note of that, that it's up to 4 points and take out the percentage there reduce the interest rate by 1%. So
right.
I make it a little bit clearer for those who are, so 4 points of the loan amount.
If I understand this correctly, if you go the buy-down rate, you can only get a maximum of $10,000.
Correct.
So it really is it's an option that most people wouldn't take because you get more dollars for upfront money and, you know, down payment assistance.
But that's only if you qualify. So the way the down payment assistance work, $10,000 for people that are in the low income bracket. $15,000 to $20,000 for people that are in the, well, let's say $10,001 up to $20,000 for people who are in the very low bracket, which is the 50 percentile. So we're talking about 80 percentile, 10,000, 50 percentile up to 20. Then from 20,001 to 35,000, you're in that 20 percentile. So if you're looking at the maximum income someone can make at 20 percentile, is $13,800-something a year. We don't have those kind of people living in Palm Coast, and they can't afford to buy a home here if they do.
Right.
So we're always going to be looking at people that are in the either 50 percentile or the 80 percentile range, and for them, they're only going to get $10,000 in down payment assistance, but if I can get the $10,000 to buy down the interest rate, and now for a 30-year loan, my interest rate is 6% instead of 7%, that saves me at least almost $300 a month on my mortgage payment.
Right. Yeah. Now you qualify for more of a home. Okay. And being a permanent, with buying down the interest rate, it's a permanent, a 30-year fixed rate loan as opposed to some of those buy downs that others are offering. Now you've got it set.
So then the next thing is the mortgage subsidy. This was something that I created at the last minute and went over with them. Mortgage subsidy, which helps us help them buy down the actual loan amount. So it's not a down payment. It's actually reducing the principal amount of the loan itself, which now still makes the house more affordable over a 30-year period because you're not financing as much.
Okay, so if you had a $100,000 loan and you took $10,000, well, now your loan is $90,000.
Correct, over a 30-year
not
period.
Not say $97,000 if it was in like an FHA or conventional.
Correct.
So the subsidy goes directly to the seller.
So the subsidy goes
directly towards your down, well, not your, in mortgage terms, it'd probably be towards your down payment, but it's reducing your
principal
balance.
Right.
So down payment assistance is actually just the down payment that you require or closing costs to close the loan. It doesn't come off the principal loan balance.
Right. So if you're looking at it from a real estate transaction, if someone is approved for a mortgage subsidy off the principal amount,
mm-hmm.
So if you wrote the transaction for $100,000, then that $10,000 would be off of that purchase price,
right.
And you would now be financing
$90,000. Correct.
So if a home buyer, if an agent is working with a home buyer, then that's presented at the offer.
Correct.
So they're going to come to you, come to the agent with an approval letter from you saying they have a mortgage subsidy for this amount.
So this is where we're going to be working with
like
specific lenders.
Yes, yes.
So
we have a gift of equity.
Right.
So yeah, because what will happen typically is it'll show on the settlement statement underneath the mortgage as a principal reduction. So like if you have a $100,000 loan, 3% down, we're now at $97,000. We do all of our stuff on that, and then on the HUD, well, what we used to call the HUD one, on the closing statement on page 3, it'll say, you know, principal reduction, and it'll show there is a subsidy, correct?
Correct. So we work with some approved lenders. So we have 5 approved lenders that have all agreed to participate in this program, like PNC Bank, Regis Mortgage, Chase Financial, all honor this program as one of their products to work with us to help get people into affordable housing.
That is awesome.
So we have approved lenders already that know about the mortgage subsidy program, has agreed that it's a great idea and a tool that they can use to help reduce the prices of the homes coming in. So the way I've set it up, the loan cannot exceed $300,000. By HUD standards, in our area, $300,000 is considered an affordable home. I'm just giving you the numbers.
Yeah.
The AMI percentages, so 30% at 7% of $300,000 is $21,000 reduction in price of the home. If they have a 50% AMI, you're going to give them 5%. And those numbers are just based off of $300,000. So it'll be the percentage price is what they get based on their AMI.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the same thing with 80%. So if it's 80% AMI, they're going to get 3%. Question to you guys would be, if those numbers sufficient, or do you think we should adjust the percentage? Talking with HUD, 3% is about the $10,000 we would have gave at 80% for either down payment assistance, closing costs. It would be equitable at 3%.
And we can use this with SHIP?
Yes. So you can choose this program and use it with SHIP as well.
And you're in third, SHIP is in second, or is the SHIP in third?
Usually SHIP is in second and we're in third. If it's in the second, because you got to remember they're all mortgages, and then the principal mortgage company will be in first position.
Mm-hmm. I think those numbers look good, the percentages.
Yeah.
So they were trying to stay in line with what we were already doing with the AMI for the down payment assistance and closing costs.
If you, because you're in third position, so you have no legal standing, but do you, what happens if a first-time buyer forecloses, the primary forecloses, and then you have $30,000 in down payment assistance?
Then what happens is that when they go to sell that property, we have an actual, that's why we record a mortgage, we have a lien on the property, and they have to request a payoff to pay that lien off.
Okay, so that's good. So in addition to a mortgage, okay. So
yeah,
even though you're in third position, you do have a lien.
Right.
So the lien.
And that's why we're not giving them that 20% buy down like we do on rehab.
Right.
Because if something does happen like that, we would rather call back all the money that we can put towards another person in the first-time home buyers program than to have percentages where we don't be able to use that funding on another home.
That's your recapture.
That's our recapture cost. So I'm asking Citizens Advisory Task Force Board to amend the current first-time home buyers program to a purchase assistance program with the changes that I suggested and recommended in this presentation. If you guys got any questions for me at this time?
You did a wonderful job. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
I 100% concur that just since I joined Citizens Advisory Task Force, you guys have grown so much and taken the recommendations of the task force very seriously and acted upon them. And we continue to see the benefit of our community. And every year, it gets better. More people are able to, you're diversifying the programs to meet more people. And I just want to commend you.
Nice.
Mr. Papa. She needs a raise.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
I got a feeling in 2 years she'll be just a full-time CBDG director.
Let me tell you, I mean, you hear the comfort zone. When I mean, completely knowledgeable of what she's doing there.
Oh, yeah.
Exceptional. Yes. Wonderful. Great job. We're proud of what you guys are doing. Thank you.
So we can move this to City Council. Y'all have to take a vote.
Yes. Well, I mean, so do we have any other questions or comments from the Citizens Advisory Task Force? Seeing none, we'll open a public comment. Any members of the public? Seeing none, we close public comment. Return to the task force. Do we have a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve. To approve the resolution 2025 amending policy relating to the Community Development Block Grant Purchase Assistance Program.
Excellent. Wonderful. Irene, roll call, please.
Mr. Obama.
A big yes.
He voted for me, too.
Well, let's make it official.
Yeah. Regularly, yes.
Valerie Clymer.
Yes.
Carla Amaral.
Yes.
Adolfo Evans.
Yes.
Tamara McElroy.
Yes.
Sam Prashan.
Yes.
Motion carries 7-0.
Thank you all so very much. Do we have an additional staff or board discussion? Seeing none, do we have a motion to adjourn?
Make a motion. Oh, go ahead. You go. Your turn.
So moved that we adjourn.
Thank you. And a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned at 6:34.